on this situation, let's just be very precise with the language. This is just a new phase in an already ongoing war. War always has this image that you have large-scale invasions, battles on big fields with tanks. This is a hybrid war that has been going on for a number of years, since 2014. Don't forget, Ukraine already lost part of its territory, the Crimean Peninsula, to Russia, which was not only occupied, but also annexed by Russia. What we're seeing now is, in the east of Ukraine, a, for the first time, acknowledgement officially of a situation what Russia had done since 2014. Since 2014, when the separatists flared up their fight with the Ukrainian government, the Russian government always supported them with weapons, with military, with support. They never acknowledged it. So what happened was not only recognizing them now as independent states, but was also now, for the first time, officially sending troops into this territory, i.e. reinforcing the troops that were already there. And, you know, really shamelessly calling them peacekeepers, which earned them a rebuttal from the Secretary General of the United Nations at that evening and today again in the General Assembly, who said, well, peacekeepers is a very specific term, and these are anything but peacekeepers. We do peacekeepers, you don't. So it is an ongoing hybrid warfare. The main part here is that it's, apart from a military confrontation, also a confrontation of narratives, i.e. mis- and disinformation. Because the way the recognition of those separatist areas by Russia in unilaterally as independent states was the reason given for that was a alleged attack off the Ukrainian side. Now, unfortunately for Russia, the OSCE, the Organization for Cooperation in Europe, has an actual observer mission at the line of contact between Russia, Ukrainian government-held territory and separatist territories that monitor every single exchange of fire because of the Minsk agreement that includes a ceasefire. And so every fire across the line is a ceasefire violation. And it is absolutely clear that there was a lot of fighting going on, instigated in large part from the separatist areas. But the Russian narrative is that they are getting attacked. And then they theatrically remove part of the population and evacuated them across the Ukrainian border into Russia to just give this thing credibility.
Yeah.
So the first thing is expect narratives to come across that explain that this is a very reasonable thing and only a defensive protective thing, when in fact is an actual very, very offensive operation that's going on.
Okay, let me ask a couple of specific questions about safety concerns. One of the things that is pretty well known, and Americans know that very well about Russia, is that you can go there and get arrested and essentially end up in prison and or perhaps kidnapped by some organization or some group and end up in the hands of people who may be Russian agents. What are your thoughts and what are your views on what Americans should do and be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this is not your time to plan your next holiday to Russia, in my opinion, as an American, because another part of this hybrid warfare is, of course, exerting pressure. Now, luckily, America, Europe is not in the business of taking hostages. I wouldn't put it past the Russian machinery to not also go down that route as well. A country that I know very well, Iran, does this all the time, taking foreigners as hostages when tensions between them and that particular country flare up. So please, you know, if you not need to be, don't be at the moment in Russia or Ukraine.
Yeah. So what about other places? And because we know that some of these murky relationships between some of these Russian-linked or Kremlin-linked organizations like the Wagner Group, you know, they have links and connections with some of these players in Iran. They have links and connections with some of these players in other parts of the world that engage in hostage taking and essentially selling people to other organizations a lot of times. And your main thing is dealing with terrorists. But you see that sometimes other organizations take a page out of that playbook for themselves. So do you see this concern being a big one?
I would say outside Russia, we're not there yet. I mean, we're not at full scale confrontation yet. You know, these things can get very much worse than they are right now. This is actually still one of the better case scenarios, you know, what happens if they then start to enter government controlled territory in order to protect the independent states, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there are escalation levels, and that's why you see that the EU and the US government are very deliberately starting sanctions, but not doing everything right now. They're preparing for waves, preparing for further escalations, which unfortunately is likely. So we're not there yet. Yeah. I would say if you're not in Russia, the places where the Wagner Group operates, and that's in, and really in a surprising, we just had a meeting this morning on this, a surprising number of places in Africa that I wasn't even aware of, pretty much all over the continent, are all conflict areas as well. So if you're there as an American, there are lots of different security concerns in Congo, in the Sahel region at the moment, because of the actual classic terrorism that's going on. So Wagner is just one of the risk factors there.
Yeah.
However, if you are at the issue of terrorism, of course, all at the moment is still a big problem for the Russian side is a pretext, right?
Yeah.
So there was already this attempt to say 5 Ukrainian soldiers crossed into Russia, although no one knows how they would ever get there, where they're supposed allegedly to be arrested. That was an indication that there could also be terrorist attacks as a pretext. And on either side of the border, it could be a terrorist attack in Ukraine to taunt the Ukrainians. It could be a terrorist attack in Russia that would then be taken as a pretext for further military action against Ukraine. So that is definitely part of what you have to expect. And the third one that is going on for months and has really intensified over the last couple of weeks is cyber attacks in Ukraine itself.
Yeah.
Against government institutions, media outlets, just anything that is important for the country. This is a hybrid modern warfare. Yeah, you know, the Russian military is very modern, but they can't, I said this morning in a different interview, the Russian army can't do an Iraq war with $3 trillion. Russia can't afford this. Russia has the economic size, the GDP comparable to Italy. Yeah, not even the strongest economy in Europe. It is very, very, very small. So this is a highly expensive thing for them. But hybrid warfare is how they compensate. That is cyber attacks, large-scale mis- and disinformation, or activating people here in America, in Europe, to put their position forward for whatever reason they're willing to do that. Trying to paint a completely screwed picture, not necessarily to dominate the narrative here on this side of the border, they dominate this very much in Russia, but to make us unsure of what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. And that's why we are very lucky that the OSCE has a mission there, because these are actual objective observers.
One last thing. How do you think this kind of instability will resonate with terror organizations? We know that there are some in the Balkans. We know that some are there, you know, in that area. But we also know that they're in other places too. So how do you think this overall conflict is going to impact the terror movement?
Yeah, I mean, what we see right now, unfortunately, is a return to a really great power competition, right? So what was really harming Al-Qaeda and harming the Islamic State with all of the Assad minus that you have to do for the Russian position, they also did fight the Islamic State to a certain extent in Syria, is that the big powers, US, Russia, to a certain extent, even China, although they did their own genocidal activities with the Uyghurs, always marched in the same direction. That was the reason why, despite big disagreements on other issues in the Security Council over the last 22 years, the counterterrorism part of the Security Council, including the sanctions part, really developed in a smooth way forward because there was unity. Now, the problem is this is serious enough to break unity on just about any issue, even an issue like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, because it's not a little dispute over territory. It's a fundamental question of how the international system works. If this goes through, after Georgia in 2006, after Crimea in 2014, it really is a big problem because it would prove time and time again, also to other actors like China, that if you are a powerful state, you can move borders, you can integrate territory, or not much is going to happen to you. So there has to be a line in the sand at some point, and I think we are closely coming to this, but that's not good news. That means there is really discord. And any weakness in our defenses against ISIL, who is doing very well in Africa, against Al-Qaeda, who in Afghanistan with the Taliban have now their patrons back into power. So these are not on the back foot. We discussed this when the ISIL chief was killed, right? Yes, this is a hit, but they're not on the back foot. They're actually doing comparatively well. And if we now weakening ourselves with internal big power competition in a serious military manner, this can only help be helpful to them.
Hans-Jacob Schindler, Senior Director of the Counter-Extremism Project. JJ Green, WTOP News.